I'm Heidi Harris, and I'm archiving some of my most popular interviews. This one features a fantastic singer and musician by the name of Linda November. You may not know her name, but I guarantee you know this.
Meow, 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 meow. Try to remember I'm Linda November.
That is so great. Linda November, glad to have you.
Thank you, darling. It's wonderful to be here.
So you did the Meow Mix commercial, which yes. was on for how many years?
I did it for 17 years straight. 1974 and 17 plus that, call my accountant because I don't do that stuff. So that was it. I mean, I did the singing cat, the laughing cat, the laying cat, the meow, the romantic cat, the cat on the keyboards, every single time. It was something else.
That's unbelievable.
It was great, yeah.
So talk to me a little. You were born and raised in Brooklyn. Talk to me about how you got into being a jingle singer. Ultimately, you sang 22,000 jingles.
That would be correct, madame.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I was born in Brooklyn, and I was, my mother was very musical. My father was a world-famous attorney, Julius November. It is my real name. He was Floyd Patterson's attorney, who was the heavyweight champion of the world. And so I have my father's photographic memory, hence perfect pitch. My cousin Richard lived upstairs, my mother's sister and her kids, and my mother used to play poker Friday nights, and she had a cigarette hanging out of her mouth, and she was like a visor, and she would deal the crap, and she'd get home at 4 o'clock or something, and she'd say, nobody better wake me. So all of a sudden, my cousin Richard comes running down the stairs in this two-family house, and of course, my mother, the queen, had to live on the first floor, God forbid she should walk stairs. And so I was sitting at the piano playing Mississippi Mud in E-flat, for those of you who know, three flats. And he was sure it was my mother. I was mimicking the way my mother played. And he goes, Aunt Ellie, and he goes, oh, my God, this little four-year-old thing with the leg swinging and the thick Coke bottle glasses and the big Jewish nose, you should pardon it. So he runs in and wakes my mother up, and she said, Richard, this better be good, better be good. Aunt Ellie, come with me. And she goes, oh, she's a genius. Okay, so I was playing and practicing, and then I started piano lessons, I guess, when I was about, I don't know, seven, which is kind of young. And a great story, you know, about perfect pitch, what perfect
pitch
yes,
is. Oh, yes, right.
It's a wonderful gift, but it's also a terrible curse. Records come on that I made 30, 40 years ago, and I go, oh, God, like Sinatra's Cycles. The soprano that I hired that was singing with me came in so sharp, and every time I hear that G-flat, I go, oh, yeah. You know, it's like,
yes, it tortures
God.
You. Karaoke bars torture you.
Oh, God.
Please.
Suicidal, my dear. Please.
We're speaking with Linda November, the jingle singer. She sung 22,000 jingles. Pretty much every jingle you know, she's done.
That's true. Jingle queen, madame.
I'm sorry
that
I say
the empress. Just talk to her majesty.
There you go.
Anyway, my piano teacher would play like the first 16 bars of a Bach, whatever, invention. And, of course, I would memorize it, but I thought I was reading it. So one day he says to me, did you have any music today, Linda? I was 11. No. Okay, go over to the other side of the living room. And he plays with both hands whatever notes he could. What am I playing? I said a C, an E-flat, a G-flat. He goes, oh, I knew it. I couldn't read a note of music. So I had to learn John Thompson's Elementary, here we go, up a row to a birthday party, like a moron. Okay. And I became one of the greatest sight readers. As they say, I read fly shit, is what the musicians say, of course. So I sang wonderfully, and I played, and I was a Gilbert and Sullivan nut, and a Rodgers and Hart, and a Rodgers and Hammerstein, Cole Porter. Everything was in my house. You know, my mother listened to all that stuff. And so I used to hear the high voices, the oohs and ahs on these records, and I would sing with them, and I'd love them. But how does a lawyer's daughter from Brooklyn learn, you know, how do you get into, quote, group singing, which I didn't know that's what it was called. And so I kept going to auditions, and I was very, very homely. I know it's hard to believe because I'm
yes.
so exquisite now.
I've never seen a picture of you homely. That shocks
oh,
me.
I'll show you when we get together and have a drink, you darling. I had my father's big Jewish nose and Coke bottle glasses, thick now, thank you, contact lenses, and then a cataract surgery ultimately when I was 55, which was insane.
It's young.
Very young, yeah. My eyes are a disaster, but you know, I shoot.
We're speaking with Linda November, the jingle singer who's done 22,000 jingles. It's unbelievable. Her career has been phenomenal. She's got stories up the wazoo, as you can tell.
Oh, and I know all the stars. Barbra Streisand, are you here again, Linda November? Oh, she's a, we call her Horrible Hannah, by the way.
Do you know when she was here at the MGM last year? Yeah. I was one of the people singing in the back for Make Your Garden Grow. Oh, I was one of the background singers.
I saw that you put that on Facebook.
I know.
Did she even talk to any of you?
No, she didn't.
Of course not.
I didn't care about that, but Chris Botti walked right by me and didn't even grab me.
Oh, he's a pain in the neck.
I don't care. He's a hot trumpet player.
You know what?
I'm a trumpet player.
There are better trumpet players than him.
Yeah, my dad was way better.
I know,
your point is...
So I grew up with Bernie Glow and Johnny Frost and the greatest trumpet player.
My dad and Johnny Frost. We're friends for 50 years.
And Johnny Frost was best man at my first wedding.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Uncle John.
I love Johnny. I got to tell you a quick Johnny Frost story.
Please.
So
I love Johnny.
Years ago, I was watching the Jerry Lewis telethon.
Sure.
Maureen McGovern, the greatest. Love her. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
She was singing a duet with the trumpet. And it was Johnny Frost. You know, da-da-da-da-da. He would go da-da-da-da-da. And I literally, my mouth just dropped open. I had never seen anything like that with Johnny Frost. I didn't know Johnny Frost. So at the end of it, she introduced him. She said, you know, John Frost.
Right.
So I called my dad. And I said, Dad, do you know John Frost? He said, I've known Johnny Frost for 30 years. I said, you have to get me a copy of that tape with Maureen McGovern. I said, I've never seen anything like it. And it took years to get it because Johnny didn't want to give it up. He said, I hit a clam at the end. I don't hear any clams. I don't hear anything. But isn't that funny that you know him too?
Funny,
what a small world.
Uncle, well, I'm Aunt Linda. And his youngest child, Ilana, is my godchild.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it was something.
What a great trumpet player he is.
Oh, what a wonderful man. And delicious, delicious man. At any rate.
So we're getting back to how you got into the jingle.
So I went to these auditions, and they kept saying the same thing. Miss November, you're a wonderful actress. You got a gorgeous voice. And it was a legitimate voice. I could have been an opera singer, too, at that point. You know, The World We Knew, over and over? That's me singing the high album on that.
Wow.
And Sinatra said, Jesus Christ. I said, don't start with me, Frank. Like, I wasn't afraid of the old man.
Over and over, I keep going over the world we knew. Once when you walked beside me.
And so I kept hearing the same things, and it was just terrible. So one day I went to my father's client, Uncle Saul Ager. He was first in the Yellow Pages. Turns out the man that was sitting there was John Rosenfeld, who was the entertainment critic of the Dallas Morning News. He was sitting in a whirlpool. You know, the old days, they had the whirlpool, you know, the podiatrist, chiropodist, that's what they called them then, a chiropodist, and for illiterates. And he said, sing for him. And I went, Uncle Saul, I don't have a piano. Just sing. So I sing Lover. He goes, just a minute. Makes a call. A limo picks me up. I make the story. Forget it. A short story long or a long story short. Takes me to a man named Gus Sherman. You know G. Sherman music?
I've heard it, yeah.
This was the gay grandson. And he discovered Jackie Cooper, Shirley Jones, Sandy Duncan, who I did summer stock with in Dallas. And she was amazed when she saw me undressed and we were 17. And she said, oh, I thought you Jews had tails and horns.
She did not say
yes,
that.
She
was
did.
She serious?
They were deadly serious. They were so serious. I told you, I could tell you too many stories. It is to say, we'll have to do 42 installments.
That is hilarious. Okay, so you get the limo goes and picks you up, and
right,
you go where
so
now?
Gus Sherman, they take me down to a beautiful brownstone on 62nd off Park. And there's Gus Sherman, these two, Craig Claymore, and they're cooking. And, you know, two little queens, they were adorable. And I said, well, what are we waiting for? He said, I'm waiting for a pianist here. I just hired one. I said, no, I'll play. You really? I sit down, I sing Lover. He says, just a minute, makes a call, go powder your nose, and takes me to an apartment on Park Avenue. Are you Miss November? Yes. I go in, elevator. It opens up. Richard and Dorothy Rogers, Dick Rogers, is standing there. And
wow.
I said, I think I'm going to drop dead.
Oh, my gosh.
So he says, Linda November, really, they're raving about you. Would you like some tea? Would you like something to drink? Or no, he said, well, they're raving. I would like to hear you sing. And I said, okay. And I said, I'll play for myself. And he looked at me because I didn't know that he was the biggest stickler. If you changed a chord, you know, if a jazz player now, if he heard what they do with tunes, oh, God, he would kill somebody. So I sat down. So I said, I'm going to play for myself. He said, is that so? And what are you going to sing for me? I said, Lover. He said, My Lover? I said, yes, you and Lorenz Hart. He said, what key do you do it in? And I said, the original D. He said, really? That's quite a high key. I said, yeah. I sang it. He goes, oh, my God, let's call your mother. Call my mother. And she goes, where are you? I said, I'm with Richard Rodgers. Yeah, right. And I'm the Queen of England. Get home.
And you're how old now?
17. That's
great.
16, 17. So anyway, I said, here's Mr. Rogers. And he said, hello, Eleanor, this is Dick Rogers. Yeah, right. And she hangs up on him.
That's funny. Oh, it's great. We're speaking, by the way, with Linda November, the jingle singer. 22,000 jingles she sung, and this is kind of the beginning of her career when she meets Richard Rogers at 17.
Yes. And so anyway, I called back and she said, give me the number. And I won't give it to anybody and say that this is the great Richard Rodgers, but I'm going to call. I want to make sure you're not with some masher or something. Anyway, so that was it. So he sent me to these auditions, and they said again, you are spectacular, but this was one-on-one because I was his protege. I was his next star. And they said, finally, he called my mother and said, she is magnificently gifted, but she doesn't make it. We got to have her nose fixed. She's got to lose like 50, 60 pounds. We got to dye her hair. We got to take it to Elizabeth Arden. And they groomed me. I met the original Joe Pilates and the Nazi that was his mistress, Carola Trier. And I was there with the New York City Ballet with Jacques D'Amboise and Melissa Hayden and this klutz. She said to me, Carola, she was a Nazi bastard. She said, you better be as talented as they say because you're such a klutz.
Oh, that's so Pilates, the original Pilates.
I met him.
So he's trying to get you in shape. They
Joe
get your
Pilates,
nose fixed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they have my nose fixed, and I look magnificent. They make my hair kind of Titian colored, and I went on a strict diet, and I looked spectacular. I have beautiful skin, beautiful eyes, beautiful hair, but it just, the nose was, as we say in Yiddish, chaloshes, meaning horrible, blech, grow up. Also, I looked just like Joan for years.
Oh, Joan Rivers, that's
everybody
funny.
Everybody would mistake.
Yeah, I guess so. If you look at that.
Hair, when you see certain pictures, and Catherine Deneuve, I have her eyes right now.
No, that's true. Now going back to the nose, here you are, an amazing singer. Were you worried about having your nose done? Because I've heard people say that Barbara Streisand was worried about getting her nose done for the same reason.
She's nuttier than you know what.
Right, but did it affect your singing at all to get your nose done?
No. It don't affect the residence. I got this residence.
But it didn't affect anything.
While he was knocking my nose and bleeding, I was singing Jerome Kern's. They didn't believe me.
Oh, that's funny.
And when I woke up, the nurses said, you have the most magnificent voice. I said, you know. And they said, because you sang.
Oh, that's funny.
The entire procedure.
Oh, that's great. So you get your nose done.
Yeah, and then he moved me and he said, you got a big fat ass. He says, you got to lose weight then and you're going to be so beautiful and you're not, it's going to take 20 years. It's going to keep changing. And I look like so many different people. I'll show you pictures when we get together.
Yeah.
That the transformation was amazing. The way I look now is the way I'm going to look until I become the mummy.
You'd be like a Vita Perone in a glass box.
God help me. Who would write a stuff? Springtime for Hitler is funny.
That is
Ava Perone?
Not so much funny.
Oh, what's his name? Andrew. Oh, great story about Andrew Lloyd Wrong, as we call him. He met the great Alan J. Lerner at a cocktail party. And he said, why is it that people take an instant dislike to me? And Alan Jay puffed on a cigarette, took his martini, and said, it saves time. True story. The man is a fraud, Andrew Lloyd Wrong.
Somebody was just telling me that about James Horner the other day, that James Horner, I know he passed away, but
yeah,
somebody I know worked for him on many soundtracks, not mentioning names.
Yeah.
And he said the guy was born in L.A., went to UCLA, and he walks around with a British accent. Hilarious.
You know, affect is, give me a break.
Yes.
All right, so they do this major transformation in my first audition I go to, and they say, Miss November, you read beautifully, you sight read brilliantly, you're a great actress. You don't look Jewish enough. It was Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, brother.
And I said, my old nose is in a jar. Right by the United Nations Grand Central Hospital. I swear I told him. I said, I can go get it, and I'll put it on with, like, Duke of Cement.
That's what happened to Jennifer Grey. She looked better with her nose job, but then it kind of killed her career because it took her unique look away. But I think your nose looks great, by the way. But
well,
I understand what you're talking about.
It was Dr. Feit, and when I met him, I said, hello, Dr. Feit. My nose is a fright. Can you make it all right, Dr. Feit? He said, I love her. And my brother had his nose done, too, Philip Nevin. He's an attorney. And my mother said, she introduced us as her two illegitimate children.
It's funny.
Because we looked
Your
nothing.
Mom never got hers done.
No.
That's so funny.
No,
we're speaking with Linda November, a jingle singer. She sang 22,000 jingles. So talk to me about the first time you actually started singing jingles.
Well, what happened was they sent me to an audition because I gave up on Broadway. And that's where I met Andy Williams' brother, Dick. I met Ray Charles of the Perry Como Ray Charles Singers, the deaf one, not the blind one. That's what he used to call himself. And so these were the group singers, the Oohs and the Ahs. And they said, you're a star. I said, no. Well, if you want to, the Ray Charles Singers, I used to watch Sing TV, this is with Perry. And he said, if you want me to hire you, I'll have my contract to hire you. I said, you mean you're going to hand me music? You're going to pay me to sing? Right. The next thing was history. All the girls got very nervous, you know. And I loved them. I took care of them. They're all full of crap. And so they never told me about residuals. So the first job I did was Fab. Oh, Fab, they put real borax in you. It was a radio spot.
Oh, Fab, they put real borax in you. Oh, Fab, they put real borax in you. It's a new kind
network radio, which is phenomenal. First check I got, I looked at it, and I thought it said $180. It was $18,000. And my mother said, darling, find out how we do more of these.
Wow.
Took me 7 years to become an overnight success. I worked with every superstar in the world. I knew them by name. I could call them up. I sang the Whoa-Whoas on San Jose. It's me and Valerie Simpson from Ashford and Simpson.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, she's a great singer. And Marilyn Jackson, who passed away.
And also, the I did not realize you did some of the original Dawn things.
Oh, yeah. Tony Wine and I are Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
We were Dawn in the studio. And they just thought it would be a hit. Then they thought it would be a good kind of hip.
You're talking
record.
About Candida, right?
Yes, Candida uh-huh. knocked three times.
Okay.
And so, and which Tony Wine wrote Candida. And his career was like, bleh. So they did this, and then it became such a smash, and they said, you want to go out on the road? I said, are you crazy?
Candida, we could make it together. The further from here, girl, the better.
Give up $10,000, $70,000 a week? No. So they got the two black girls, and so we were the two white Jewish We were white Jewish dogs.
And that was Thelma Hopkins and Joyce Vincent Wilson. It's amazing, but my mind remembers. I don't know.
Amazing. You talk faster than I do. It's not possible.
It's hard to do. So you're making that much money a week doing jingles?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you know what a slow week for me was? 40, 50 grand.
Unbelievable. Now, you are the kind of person who could just go in there and nail it the first time because
all
you're great. Because there are people who can sing well, but not many people who can sing as well as you. And also, you could sight read, and that's a huge deal.
And we were called the Golden Dozen, six girls, six boys. We were monster musicians. You walk in, look at it, run the track, record. In, out, bing, bam, next.
Boom.
8 jobs, 10 jobs a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I walked out on Neil Diamond once. It was a record called Star-Crossed Lovers. You know who Phil Ramone was?
Oh, yeah.
And may he rest in peace. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was already bloody. I'm singing D's above high C, and Neil was being impossible. And I said, you know what? Phil, how many great takes do you have in the can? He goes, every one. You know that. It's not a question. We could just interchange them. And I said, Neil, I can't. And he said, oh, I need one more. I said, yeah, I'm out of here. And I split. Same thing with Donald Fagen.
Mm-hmm.
He did the same thing to me. And they, now Burt Bacharach, finally I said, I am not going to sing that obligato another minute because I'm doing this because I love you, but I got 42 jingles to do tomorrow and I can't possibly.
See, that's the point. A lot of people blow their voices out like Wayne Newton and people like that. They can't sing after a certain period of time.
You know, he's a little redheaded Irish boy.
Wayne? Is he?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's freckled and red hair.
Yeah, I'm not. Let's skip Wayne. Not my favorite subject. But I'm just thinking about the whole concept of people who don't take care of their voices, and then they wake up one day. I mean, this is your instrument, and some people aren't as good with that as they should be.
Well, you know, in the old days, Sinatra, everybody, they worked 7 nights a week. Now Celine Dion doesn't talk, and this one, Julie Budd, doesn't come out, and come on.
Yeah, they got the vaporizers in their room.
Oh, do me a favor. If you know how to sing correctly, just like if you're a classical ballerina and you can do jazz and you can dance. And, you know, it's the same premise as long as you keep it healthy. And that's all. It's just like a watch. It's a finely tuned instrument. As long as you know, and my teachers always used to say, because I studied classically all my life, if you do something wrong in the studio, you'll get this bad habit in the studio thing. Mm-hmm. But we will fix it here. Because once you do something bad, your muscles immediately go to the bad place.
Oh, interesting. And then you can ruin your voice.
Your teacher will write it. And so, because there were times, you know, forget Miamics, that was easy. I mean, that was a piece of cake for me. We had to pant for 28 seconds and sing, bark if you like meat. I was going to bark, but the dog will. So I don't want to wake up the dog.
Yes, my dog's in the studio. By the way, I'm Heidi Harris. This is Linda November. You're listening to the jingle singer who sang 22,000 jingles. So, yeah, it wasn't just about the singing. There were other things that you did.
What do you mean? I'm sorry.
You were talking about sound effects like panting and things like that, which are hard on your voice.
Absolutely. And there were certain things that they would ask me to do, and I'd say, you know what? I'm not the right one. Now, figurines. Remember figurines?
Oh, yeah.
Figurines do a lady proud. They're the diet lunch that you can crunch out loud. Figurines.
When I was a little kid, I didn't realize there was a song called Tangerine that it was based on. But I was a little kid, so what did I know? And then later on when I heard Tangerine, I went, wait a minute. I don't know where figurines came from.
How about Flamingo Herb? Jeffrey. That's the old gag.
Right.
Well, Carla Borelli was the model that lip-synced to me, and I said, I should look so good, and she said, I should sing so good. So, you know, I had to work with her. And
well, they did that. Remember years ago they did, who was it, the CNC Music Factory. Remember they had the girls who actually sang it
Right. Looked
nothing like the girls who were on the record.
Absolutely.
How often did that happen? Because you sang on a ton of popular records.
Yeah, well, the wing and we did a lot of disco. Like, you know, remember Babyface?
Oh, yeah.
I sang all those parts.
Wow, that's a great song.
The Fife and Drum Bugle Corps with Harold Wheeler.
Mm-hmm. You got the cutest little baby face. You got the cutest little baby face. You got the cutest little baby face.
Who won't return my calls now? I think he's gotten snotty. But that's okay.
Who needs
it's his loss. No, I don't.
Who needs him anymore?
Shoo.
Who needs these people?
I don't need them.
That is hilarious. So, now, you did this all in New York? That's where you did most of the jingles?
All in New York, yeah. Wow. Occasionally, we went to Chicago. Do you know Bonnie Herman?
I know the name.
Well, Bonnie was my counterpart in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Singers Unlimited.
Uh-huh.
One of the greatest singers.
So there were just a few people in New York and a few people in Chicago and maybe a few in L.A. doing this pretty much all the
time. But the hub was New York because all the advertising agencies were on Madison Avenue.
Yeah.
So that's where they were.
Kind of like Mad Men, only it wasn't quite that far
back. You know
back,
what? But all my friends who are now in their late 70s, I mean, late 80s, I mean, they were a lot older than I was.
Yeah, because you were a kid. You were a teenager.
Yeah, I was a kid. But the Mad Men, they really resent what they portray there, because it really wasn't like that. The music, the heads of music would hire me, or the jingle houses would call me. And so I never saw the inner workings.
Of course not. Now, how many jingle houses were there back in New York?
Oh, dear God.
Were there tons of them or just a few?
Yeah, no, there were at least 30, 40, 50.
Okay.
And there were just maybe five or six that were the greatest.
Right. So you're literally making $40,000, $50,000 a week. And this is back in when?
From 70 to 90.
Unbelievable. And the great thing for you is that you were well known in the industry, but you could walk down the street and nobody harassed you.
Absolutely.
How great to make the money, do what you love, but still have a life.
Except for the cult people. There are a lot of cult people still. I used to play strings for Bill Acosta,
mm-hmm.
and people would come with Meow Mix boxes and ask you to sign
That's
them.
So great.
And
so they knew
you stalkers.
Were.
Yeah. Yeah. One day, my mother, who was just wonderful, you know, and so many stories. My God, Perry Como. Perry was singing Put Your Hand in the Hand of the Man, and he hated this song, and he was looking at them in the booth. And we were a big group, and now they knew who I was starting to he called me Brooklyn. Hey, kid, come here, Brooklyn. So we just finished this big chorus. He grabs me. Perry Como grabs me and puts me in front of the microphone, sing the bridge. My mama taught me how to pray. And he's so happy you could hear all the track applauding. And then I sang a duet with him at the end. And he said, you saved my ass, kid, because he would keep his hat there. If he didn't like what they were doing, he'd walk out.
Some of the best people to work with at that time?
Perry Como was a love. I worked with Garland on a Como show, and she was so screwed up, so messed up.
Already, huh?
And
that's so sad. She's so talented.
Oh, please. And my husband, the great Trekmeister, wrote for Liza for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know that great chart of Teach Me Tonight for us?
Yeah, from, I love that song.
Truck.
Sure.
That's his chart.
Wow. When did you stop doing jingles? Because I know you're still singing, you're still playing now that you live in Vegas.
No. I've had it. It's enough already.
You're done.
I peed enough.
After 22,000, that was enough?
And all these years, and then Artie and I were at Harrah's for 10 years, four shows a day, 6 days a week.
You're kind of done.
Oh, it's enough already. You know what? I'd have to work 4 or 5 hours a day vocally.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to stop boozing. And you know what?
Who needs it? We got the checks rolling in.
The heck with it. I mean, what do I care? I mean, I proved it. How much more can I sing? Artie Sunshem is Kenny Loggins' musical director, and he's doing a lot with Don Felder, and he's a monstrous talent. He's a gorgeous boy. He's a legitimate opera singer, a Heldon tenor, a Wagner tenor, a wonderful piano player, drummer, bass player, monster bass player. And one day I said, I'm just so depressed, Shemmy. And he said to me, do you know the histrionics you did with your instrument? You did stuff that wasn't humanly possible. And you don't think that 40 years later you're going to pay the price? Mm-hmm. Think about the athletes. Think about the runners. Think about the tennis players. It's going to catch up with you. Mm-hmm. Great surgeons. It's going to catch up.
True.
And I realize now I cannot do what I did. It broke my heart.
Yeah, but you don't need to. You've done it. You don't have one thing to prove. 22,000 jingles, a coke and a smile, meow mix, all these other jingles that we all grew up with that you were doing, making $40,000, $50,000 a week in the 70s, which is incomprehensible to me.
80.
It's unbelievable.
And you know, the big corporations didn't want to pay when we incorporated.
Oh.
They didn't want to pay us. And then finally, Ford decided to, and they all followed suit because we all incorporated.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, it was amazing.
That was a smart thing to do. Now you got people in Vegas trying to get $100 gigs. It's really terrible.
Well, thanks to the unions, they put everybody out of business. They kept raising the scale. They allowed tapes to be played. The musicians' unions, they were gangsters.
Yeah.
When Barry came in, and Barry Manilow is one of my oldest friends, I sang that middle part of Copacabana for him. He called me and
you
said,
did.
I asked for you. They didn't hire you. I said, forget it. He said, I'm desperate. I said, I have 15 minutes. So he had a tuna fish sandwich for me and a Dr. Brown's cream soda and a sour pickle. And he said, this is what I need. And I sang from the bottom up 4, double, triple, 3, 2, 1.
So that's you. That's great. How long did that take?
It's the middle. Have a banana.
Minutes. Right.
Less. Maybe 5, 6 minutes.
That's so great.
Brought in that show, Copacabana in Atlantic City, he brought in tapes, and the union didn't stand up like the maids and the schmaids and the bartenders. Right. Everybody protects them, AFL-CIO thugs, but not
the
musicians. Oh,
yeah, same thing happened here in Vegas back in the day. My dad walked the picket line, and then the unions just kind of fell apart. They didn't stand up when they should have, and now what we've got is junk.
And you know, in Harrah's in Atlantic City, union musicians were playing the big shows in the big room, in the theater. And then they would come and they wouldn't come in to see us. And then they charge us work dues. And it wasn't a union gig.
Wow.
And that kind of chutzpah.
Yeah.
This union is a joke.
Yeah. I don't blame you for getting out of it. Linda November, great to talk to you.
My
what
pleasure.
A privilege. You got stories up the wazoo.
You're the best.